The year is 2016. A teenage girl wakes up to get ready for school, but first there are some more pressing matters to attend to. She turns on her phone and checks Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, Pinterest, Tumblr, and many more apps and her crazy assortment of tools she thinks are necessary for her everyday, ordinary life. These kids are the tech natives, and they operate in a different way than most people can even follow. Multitasking is the new norm. Focusing on just one thing is boring. This may seem like the next great step in human functioning, but it doesn't stop there. The year is 2026, 10 years later. The same woman wakes up to get ready for work and puts on her glasses. Before breakfast, she must attend to all of the notifications now lingering on her peripheral vision. By touching the icon floating midair with the tip of her finger, several screens pop up and now float right in front of her. Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, Pinterest, Tumblr, all of the same necessary applications now adapted to the new technology. A ringing phone materializes, obscuring the other floating objects. A call from her boss. She ignores it. Coffee comes first. When she decides to call him back later on, his floating head appears and talks to her in real time. This is the future built around these tech natives, with this new step in human functioning in mind. And a lot of it is already possible now. For the last 3 years, I've been attending an annual event called the Augmented World Expo in Silicon Valley. This is the world showcase for upcoming augmented reality and virtual reality technology. The expo has grown exponentially since my first time attending and shows no sign of slowing down. The augmented revolution is here, and within several years, it will be a very big part of your life. Last year, I hosted a similar show on the Augmented World Expo, and my theme was using this technology to bring people and communities together. Traversing the expo floor, I asked these soon-to-be tech giants and founders of startups how they thought AR and VR could do just that. Many were more than thrilled to talk about it, as most of the questions they were being asked involved tech specs and the business side of things. The responses were varied, but the conclusion was that AR and VR will be the next big tool to do just that, to bring people and communities together. If you're interested, I recommend you listen to last year's show. Just go to kkfi.org and search Augmented Reality. This year, we'll be expanding on that theme and going forward into the territory everybody wants to talk about. Real, actual superpowers. Only this time asking about just that. Asking how we can use augmented and virtual reality to improve ourselves and give real superpowers to the people. The main question on everyone's mind seemed to be, what can we truly accomplish once we have these new abilities in our grasp? You're listening to The Augmented Revolution, bringing superpowers to the people. Starting with virtual reality and the leaps and bounds it's made in the last few years, we'll move on to a summary of augmented reality and what it's already capable of after that. Then, you'll hear the interviews conducted with Ryan Pamplin, the Vice President of Sales and Marketing at Meta, an augmented reality company. An interview with Nima Shams, the Vice President of Headworn Products at the Osterhout Design Group, another augmented reality company. And with Ori Inbar, the founder of the Augmented World Expo itself, and CEO of AugmentedReality.org. So let's start with virtual reality. Virtual reality has been present in our pop culture, science fiction, and collective imaginations for a very long time. Now it's also a big part of our ever-growing list of entertainment platforms and Amazon wish lists. VR is finally here, and it's made leaps and bounds in the last several years. Up until now, virtual reality has been seen mostly as escapism and entertainment by many. So, how on earth could it be used for heightened abilities? How can VR help us do things we were incapable of before? One answer developers are coming up with is empathy, through experiencing the lives of others. Several VR startups have created experiences that help Westerners understand what it's like to be a refugee. Through VR, you can be put directly into the perspective of one of these refugees in a camp that exists right now. One such company is Riot, R-Y-O-T. A Los Angeles for-profit company that specializes in creating VR video content from developing and disaster-affected nations. Riot travels to these nations with a 3D virtual reality camera in hand and works on creating experiences out of it. Their hope is that virtual reality will create an emotional connection that has typically not been very present through viewing tragedy with just still 2D images. VR is considered as an experience rather than just something observed, so we can use that to instill a greater sense of empathy in people who would otherwise be disconnected from worldwide events and tragedies. Riot was acquired by Huffington Post. In addition, a nonprofit organization has actually been created to support and encourage using this technology to change the world for the better. The Virtual World Society, led by Tom Furness, a man known as the grandfather of virtual reality. The Virtual World Society's main goal is creating virtual worlds and tools that help transform lives and turn VR hype into social progress. They state that they're connecting virtual worlds created around the world to address critical problems. These are just some ways among many detailing how virtual reality can be a superpower in its own right. And it's up to content creators out there to come up with new and interesting ways to help people with this technology that differ from just entertainment. So, with virtual reality out of the way, let's move on to its counterpart, augmented reality, and the interview portion of the special. Augmented reality differs from virtual reality in that instead of immersing yourself into a digital world, you are bringing that digital content to the real world, like holograms. Augmented reality, or AR, adds a whole new dimension of interactivity to everyday life. When you stare at a phone, it creates a barrier between you and the people around you. I'm sure everyone's been frustrated when, on a first date, the other person is on their phone the whole time. You don't make a connection. By removing that barrier between the real world and technology, we're no longer separated from the people around us. That content simply becomes a part of the environment around you, prompting you to still interact with the physical world. One great example of augmented reality is Pokemon Go, the game that swept the nation over the summer. Pokemon Go took the traditional elements from the older Pokemon games, like battle and catching monsters, and put it into the real world. By superimposing their game on top of your phone's GPS, they could make you explore and meet new people by simply playing it. I'll never forget the week the game launched. Just how many people were gathered all over the place and meeting each other in Kansas City. It's undeniable that they created a worldwide phenomenon that, at least for a little while, brought people outside and closer together. But augmented reality goes much further than just GPS-based applications. For a lot of companies, the direction AR is going is towards head-mounted displays that create 3D objects, summon floating screens, highlight real objects like tools and levers, and much, much more. The two companies I will be interviewing are doing just that, creating head-mounted displays that place 3D content right in your field of vision. And so with that, let's move on to the interview portion of this special. Note that these interviews were conducted at the expo itself, so please excuse the background noise. My first interview is with Ryan Pamplin, Vice President of Marketing and Sales at Meta, an augmented reality company. Meta creates their own head-mounted AR glasses and works with developers on creating content for them.
One year ago, I interviewed Meta about how AR can bring communities together. Now the topic is closer to the theme of the expo itself, augmenting people and their abilities, or giving them new abilities. But first, can you tell me what has changed in the last year in the world of AR?
There has been such an enormous amount of progress within Meta particularly, but the birth of the ecosystem of developers, of companies working on very particular pieces of hardware to provide better optics, better haptics, better tracking. It's all advanced very, very rapidly. I think if you look at Meta 1 versus what we have today, Meta 2, it's an order of magnitude difference in quality in terms of field of view, in terms of image fidelity, in terms of resolution, in terms of the ability for the sensors to keep track of your position. to keep track of your hands and objects. It's all gone from cool novelty to actually useful. And now it's about getting in the hands of developers who are going to build the content, applications, and experiences that are going to drive that true usefulness and shift this computing paradigm from a box on your desk or a rectangle in your pocket to having the whole world as your desktop background.
Absolutely. Would you say it's developer friendly now? Would you say now is the time for developers to get involved?
Absolutely. If you're thinking about getting into AR as a developer, now is the absolute perfect time. The resolution, the fidelity, the VR on top of the real world is the best way to describe it to someone who hasn't tried AR. First of all, you got to try it. Find a friend who has it. Go find a demo. Go to a conference. Order one. Do whatever you got to do to try it, because it's a life-altering experience. It's perspective-shifting. And, you know, I've met with the leaders of the big companies in Silicon Valley and the wireless companies, and everyone believes this is the next computing paradigm. And I think, you know, if you can be a developer at the beginning of that, you're going to have some expertise and knowledge that's going to cause you to be in very high demand probably for the rest of your career.
So this year for the Augmented World Expo, the theme Superpowers to the People seems to have stuck. It's the same as last year. Do you think that the reason for this is that augmented and virtual reality epitomize the theme of using technology to give superpowers to people?
I think there's a great saying, which goes something along the lines of, any technology sufficiently advanced is indistinguishable from magic. And I think VR and AR are making magic happen. They're making things that are impossible possible. And in a lot of ways, you can see these as superpowers. The only thing I would say the only way it's not really superpowers is, you know, when you think about AR, it's not just about gaming. And if we think about superpowers, some people might immediately think, oh, entertainment. But it's so much more than that, right? AR is going to replace your phone. It's going to replace your laptop, your tablet, your TV, and pretty much every screen in the world. And it's going to put a bunch of digital information on top of the real world that isn't already there, but is truly useful and is going to enhance all of our lives. So you could think of that as superpowers, but it's so much more than just fun and games. It's, you know, real, true usefulness, and it's going to change the way we work, play, shop, learn, build things, design things, and so much more.
So as opposed to just shooting lasers at each other, you know, with these devices for fun and throwing fireballs and all this, this will give people actual augmented abilities that they would not have had otherwise. It'll give them new capabilities, things to do, things to help people, ways to do all this, is what you're saying?
Absolutely. And, you know, we have thought of a ton of these already, right? And I'm sure a lot of people that are in AR have already thought of a ton of these. There's a lot of developers out there with you know, a ton of excitement that's been pent up for years. Some of these people have been waiting for years, some have been waiting for decades, and finally the technology's here. The canvas for you to paint on is now available. And it's the developers who are going to define all of those ways that it can be useful. And that usefulness is going to become very serious this year on a large scale, with at least hundreds of really high-quality applications, maybe thousands. That's going to pave the way to a much broader audience, you know, tens of thousands this year, hundreds of thousands next year, and I think millions the year after that. And, you know, as these things go mobile, you're going to see this incredibly vast amount of digital knowledge we have, very beautifully layered on top of the real world. So if you look at a statue, boom, you're going to know when it was built, who it is, what it's of, you know, when it was put there. If you're walking down the street trying to find something, you're going to see a line on the ground drawing it right to the store you go to. You know, if you're vegan like me, you're going to look at food and it's going to tell you if it's vegan or not, if I can eat it. I don't have to read every ingredient of every product in the store. There's these little things in life that we take for granted that are going to become a lot easier. And if we don't notice the technology, we're doing it right.
So it's not just augmenting your vision is what you're saying. That what this also gives you the ability to do is have more knowledge and mindfulness awareness of the stuff around you, this constant knowledge. Is that basically what you're saying?
it's taking all of the world's information, which you can find on the internet. But instead of having to Google search for something, you're just going to look at it and you're going to have that context and that additional layer on top. And, you know, you're going to be able to turn on and off layers at some point. You know, I might have a friends layer, and if you've been here where we are right now before, maybe you left a note here. And if you're my friend, or if you're a friend of a friend, maybe I'm going to see that you've left that here, because there's persistence in the world. Even if you go home and you're, you know, thousands of miles away from here, you can come back, it's still going to be here, or your friend can visit and it's still going to be there. I think, you know, you're going to start to have sort of not the internet, but the next generation of the internet as a layer on top of the real world, and it's going to be far more relevant to where you are, what you're doing. You know, if you walk into the subway and you're going to get on the subway, there's going to be a map right in front of you, and there's going to be timetables, and there's going to be, you know, interactive directions and all these things that you don't have to pull it up, because the device knows you're in the subway and someone has left those instructions there because it makes sense for them to be there. And now think about, you know, an elevator, think about a restaurant, think about an Uber, think about all the different interfaces for all of these things that could exist on top of the real world and interface with the real world. And that's where I think things start to get really exciting, because it's really actually about getting rid of these interfaces. I don't want to be sucked into a phone or a computer or a tablet or a TV. I want to make eye contact with you. I want to have a deeper human connection. And I think the digital devices have been pulling us away from that. And I think that AR, particularly what Meta is doing, we're going to drive each other closer together. We're going to have a more natural machine than we've ever had before, something that you innately know how to interact with because it works the way the real world works, and something that also ties into the environment very well, and something that's truly collaborative and not, you know, transporting us to some fantasy land.
So instead of having a barrier between you and the next person to communicate, this is sort of a seamless superimposing of all of this information and technology and possibilities into the real world, and so you're still interacting face-to-face with people.
Bingo. It's about deeper connection without, notification, without notifications blinding you because they're coming up in your face every 3 seconds, right? We don't want that. We want to figure out with neuroscience what is the best approach to, human interaction with this digital layer. And one of the big things is you're not flat. I'm not flat. We're 3D creatures, and our displays are flat. And we've got to break out of not just the dimensions of the screens, but the flatness of the screens. So, you know, what we're really building is volumetric computing, and that is fundamentally different. It kills the metaphor of a mouse moving around on a screen, and it's you touching objects like you would in the real world.
So with all of these different possibilities, of course, there are going to be some ethical and moral responsibilities that come with it. And, you know, with this theme of superpowers, of course, I'm going to need to reference and tie in the comic book world a little bit. One famous quote is, "With great power comes great responsibility." So in an interconnected world that features widespread AR and VR, what moral and ethical responsibilities do you think might come with that? I know last year Meta talked about counteracting surveillance with suvalence. Is that still in the works, or projects similar to it, or anything you can talk about relating to that?
So really interesting conceptual stuff. You know, those guys work on really incredible research and development of all sorts of new technologies, and it's very fascinating, but there's not a direct translation to any applications we're ready to talk about today.
Mm-hmm.
We live in a time when there's a certain expectation of a lack of privacy. That's how I feel, and I think a lot of people feel that way. And I think, you know, famously in the last couple of years, Zuckerberg has said a couple times that, you know, people shouldn't expect any privacy. I'm not that extreme. I want privacy, and I want other people to have privacy. I also want to live in a safe place and have a safe country and a safe world, more so than even just my country. I don't really want my phone tapped or my glasses tapped.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, we care a lot about consumer privacy, and we're going to face a lot of privacy issues with this technology. I don't know all the right answers, and we don't as a company know all the right answers yet, and no one does. This is new territory. I was a glass explorer, and I used glass back in the day, and I wore it around the grocery store and different places, and there's stigma with it. People don't necessarily like it. But people also weren't really sure what the technology could do, and, you know, if you're going to take video of someone, there probably should be some kind of notification that is visible that, hey, they're recording video of me. If you're using the sensors to, you know, make a map of the world, I don't know if that's the same as recording a video, right? I can't play that back. So I think there's a lot of new things we have to, I think there's a lot of new things that we have to think about in this world where everyone is wearing an augmented reality device. It's a whole bunch of new privacy problems. But in a lot of ways, it's similar to what we have with smartphones. And it's just, you know, more obvious in your face because it's on your face. I think a lot of people, as this becomes more of a glasses form factor, it will become commonplace and acceptable in the same way that smartphones have become commonplace and acceptable. But we do need to put protections in place for people's privacy, and we absolutely will. And as we develop the product, we've got to think deeply about these things and, you know, put the right protections in place to protect the privacy of people around you, but also to protect the privacy of the data on your device.
So you would say privacy will be the primary ethical or moral debate going on about this new technology?
I think so. I mean, I think there's another side of it, which is, you know, do you want to have all this digital information on top of the world, and is this how you want to live your life? And I understand there are some people who would prefer not to have all of this technology. I've met a lot of those people, and my fiance even is one of those people who, you know, really, before she really got to understand why Meta exists, I think she was like, oh no, I don't want a computer on my face. But when she realized that it really was about deeper connection with each other and with the world, and she realized the benefits of it, and she tried it, it was like, okay, I get it. This is actually something I want to have and I must have. I think it's one of those things people really need to try and understand. It's going to happen, whether people like it or not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if it's, even if Meta didn't exist, it's going to happen anyway, right? It wouldn't be as good, but it would happen. It's inevitable. Science fiction's been predicting it for a long time. And the technology is finally getting to a point now where it actually is good enough. And within a few years, it's going to be good enough to replace, you know, a phone.
But you don't think it will have the Bluetooth effect, or the Bluetooth earpiece effect, where people would immediately judge someone wearing one of those? You think this is just going to be something people will need to adopt and get used to because it's inevitable and because it's going to happen whether whatever company does it?
The usefulness of the device and the information will be so much so that you can't possibly go back to the old way of doing things because it's too good.
So the abilities it gives you, the new ways of doing things and living your life, will far outweigh the negative effects, or at least help counteract that and make it worthwhile?
I believe that very strongly. And I think almost everyone here, probably you too, also believes that very strongly. And we as an industry have a job to do, which is, one, to create really compelling content and experiences, but two, it's to not allow that stigma to happen. You know, how do we avoid the Bluetooth stigma that we've seen in the past? I never want to hear MetaHole.
To wrap things up, though, could you talk a little bit about Meta's plan for the future, or what you guys plan to be focusing on for the
sure.
next several years, or just AR in general for the next 5 or so years? Do you think it'll become widespread and we'll start tackling some of these issues, drawing some of these lines and stuff like that?
Absolutely. The lines will be drawn as we go. You know, we as an industry need to self-police so that other entities and governments don't try to do it for us.
So we need to be very careful about that and learn from things that have been done well and also things that have been done poorly with other technologies and devices. The goal for Meta is not to build glasses or to build software or to have a tight integration between the two. We do all of those things, right? We're going to build an amazing volumetric experience that is going to redefine computing, and already is in the early stages. But what it's actually about is that paradigm shift, right? It's about getting rid of a box on a desk or a rectangle in your pocket and giving you the ability to have the right information at the right place at the right time, and to improve your life. You know, if I'm walking around a conference and I met you before, it would be really nice if my glasses highlighted and said, boop, this guy, you know him, you met him a year ago at the same event, and he did this interview with you. Here it is, and here's his LinkedIn. If you want to connect, you do a fist bump. And, you know, if you want to be Facebook friends, you give him a special high five, you know, whatever. I mean, these kinds of things will be built. And they will be incredibly useful. They're going to make us smarter. They're going to make us more efficient. They're going to make us more productive. They're going to entertain us. They're going to allow us to communicate with each other in ways that have never been possible outside of an in-person conversation. You're going to be able to do a holographic phone call and see your loved one, or a business associate, or your board of directors, or your doctor, or your lawyer, all right in front of you, like they're really there, and you're going to be able to walk around them, and it looks like they're there, but they're not really there. And, you know, we have early versions of this today, which provide this kind of experience. And, you know, as a guy who spent half the year on the road last year, I can tell you, for me, that's a big deal, to have that sense of presence, like I'm really there with my fiance, we're spending time together. You know, we could even be sitting on a couch. I can sit on a couch in China. She can sit on a couch in San Francisco. And, you know, we could bring up, you know, our favorite show together. And we can watch it right in front of us on a virtual screen. And I can look over and see how she's reacting to the show. And she can see how I'm reacting. You know, these kinds of collaborative experiences are going to fundamentally change the way that people communicate with each other. And, you know, when I talk to people that lead, you know, companies like some of the wireless carriers in the world and wireless device manufacturers, they all believe this is going to change the way, right? The phone call is not going to be forever the way it is today. You know, it's not just about better clarity of audio. It's about taking it to another level. And video conferencing is cool, but you miss a lot of the subtle human nonverbal communication. And you get that back when you go to a holographic call. And I'm really looking forward to that because I think we all won't have to travel as much. We'll be able to have these high bandwidth conversations that right now we can only get in person in a new way that I've never experienced before outside of this.
All right. Well, thank you very much for taking your time to talk to me.
Yeah, of course.
My next interview is with Nima Shams, Vice President of Headworn Products at the Osterhout Design Group, otherwise known as ODG. ODG also creates their own head-mounted AR displays and works closely with government and corporate partners to create content for them.
Tell us a little bit about ODG and how they got started. Has the interest in augmented reality been present from the start?
Absolutely. So Ralph Osterhout, our CEO, is a horrific inventor. He actually did the night vision goggles that was used by the U.S. military and our partners. So he always had a passion about headwear, because the primary senses of the human body are on the head: your eyes, your nose, your mouth, your ears. So that's where the technology should be. Also, headborne has natural advantages over other devices. It's body position independent. It's hands-free. Where your head goes, your whole body goes. So you could control the content and the information as it flows. So there's been a huge passion about headborne for a very long time. 1999, the company got kicked off, but it wasn't really until 2009 when we aggressively went into this space.
And that's when the interest in augmented reality in particular took off?
Absolutely, yeah. So we believe that a consumer or the client that uses our product isn't going to compromise, right? They expect that high resolution they're used to from a TV or a monitor or a laptop. Mm-hmm. And the ability to isolate or not isolate the user from the environment is very important. If I'm watching a movie and I want to be immersed in it, I don't really want to see the real world. But if I'm suddenly walking around and I'm superpositioning information to enhance what I do, for example, I work on Caterpillar and I look at one of their machines and augment it. So the ability to do both was very, very important to ODG from the beginning.
Absolutely. All right. So I've noticed that for this year, for the Augmented World Expo, the theme superpowers for the people seems to have stuck. And it's repeated from before. Do you think augmented reality epitomizes this using technology to give people powers theme? And how do you think ODG does that, what you guys create?
Absolutely. So the three pillars ODG stands for is cinema quality displays, full integration, and full mobility. Because we want people to have this enhanced ability everywhere and at all times. One example I would love to say is a company named New Eyes. And what they did was they went after people with visual impairment. So macular degeneration, retinal pigmentosis. So they took our glasses, they put it on their head, runs Android, so they wrote a simple Android app, and now these people that had difficulty seeing before now can see the real world again. They can say glasses change color and alter reality to match what they could see. Or they could say glasses make bigger and zoom in. So now this person that had a challenge viewing the world is extremely mobile, can go everywhere, and it's fully integrated, and has the ability to interact with his world and enhance the world. And that's just one tip of the iceberg of the powers that these devices start giving people.
So you would say what you guys are all about is augmenting people's abilities and giving them new abilities as well.
Absolutely. What we try to do is fuse the digital world and the real world together. So our goal is for you not to know what's real and what's digital. Because when you mix those two together, it just enhances people's lives, either in entertainment or in work or in, you know, services. So our job is to basically build a mobile computing platform that will transcend all of your displays and all of your devices in the future.
And so you've described ODG as a platform company, and that's what you guys create. Could you explain that a little bit more in depth for the listeners?
Absolutely. So we, besides the fantastic hardware we have and cinema quality displays and full integration, is we also have a software stack. Our product runs Android, because Android is the most used and developed OS out there. So any Android developer feels at home on our device. However, Android's not optimized for headphone. So we took this step further and put Reticle OS on top of Android. So for example, we have two displays instead of one. The color black doesn't exist because that's the real world. And how do you interact with a device that has no touchscreen? So Reticle OS answers all of those. But the most important thing of all is with a phone, you pull it out and engage it. But with an Android device, a headphone device, it needs to know when to engage you. If I'm driving a car, I don't want a Facebook message. It needs to know what I'm doing and what activity. So our device is packed with sensors. We have built-in IMUs. We have GPS and GNSS. We have an altimeter that tells you before you are in the building. So you fuse all of the hardware, all of the software, and allow a playground for developers to come and easily develop in with our development kit and our dev side and our Reticle Partners program. And now you have a platform where people can start doing magic. One example of that is a company named Otoy. Otoy is very famous. They won the Technical Academy Award for their work on Benjamin Button. They do really amazing renderings. And they took their light engine technology, poured it into the glasses, and now you see real life light rays, light field in the glasses right now.
That's amazing. So you would say your platform gets rid of, say, the barrier that exists with previous existing forms of technology, and instead you bring that to the real world and blur the line between digital and real.
That's absolutely right.
Could you give a little, few more examples about how ODG can give people superpowers? I saw in one of the presentations this pilot gas mask that lets you pilots essentially see through smoke that may be filling the plane.
Exactly. Yeah. So a sad event occurred a couple years ago where in the cargo of a plane something went off and it filled the whole plane with smoke. The pilots pulled down their gas masks and they could breathe fine, but unfortunately they couldn't see the instruments and they couldn't see where they were flying. And I believe there was a really bad accident. So lives were lost and cargo was lost and plane was lost. So it was very, very bad. What we've done is looked at collaborating our technology into those air masks. So when you pull it down, now you get air, and all of the sensor data of the plane is plumbed directly into the user's vision. So they can fly the plane purely off sensors. If there's a camera on the front of the plane, they can activate that camera and allow the pilots to see where they're going. So allowing them to safely land the plane if an incident like a whiteout occurred.
So, with this theme of superpowers, of course, there are going to be a few references and ties into the comic book world.
Yes.
Naturally. So, one famous quote from that world is, "With great power comes great responsibility."
That's Spider-Man.
Exactly. And so, in an interconnected world that features, say, widespread ODG glasses or widespread augmented reality in general, what new moral and ethical responsibilities do you think will come with that? What will we need to be aware of?
Yeah, absolutely. The human race is very interesting, right? We're naturally very curious, and we naturally are very social. In the beginning, you know, you could go to a room and use the desktop computer. Then you took the room with you on a laptop. Now you have a mobile phone that's a supercomputer in your pocket. And we believe the next natural evolution of that is going to be headborne. There are a lot of ethical, you know, issues about that versus the camera, when the camera is displayed, or the ability of what type of content is presented where. But I'm very hopeful in seeing the natural progression of technology and the way that people have interacted. I don't actually see it as something that potentially can harm, but bring people together. Now I can collaborate with a colleague on the other side of the world wearing this device. Now if I'm in a situation where I need help, I can easily turn on my device and my loved ones can know what's going on, where I am, and maybe even see through my point of view of what's going on. And I think those will enhance and benefit humanity rather than potentially harm them.
So alongside with the ethical and moral problems that might arise with this, what you're saying is that the benefits greatly outweigh that. The abilities they give us and the ways we can help people through this technology very much outweighs or at least helps to counteract some of the ethical problems.
Correct. And I think some of the ethical problems that are seen as issues eventually will evolve to not be as big as an issue. Like when phones first came out, it was a little bit, you know, rude for people to be on their phones, right? Is that good or not for society? Maybe they interact less with actual person, but now they're interacting with the real world.
Absolutely.
So I think we as a human beings will naturally evolve to adopt this disruptive new technology that's going to benefit our lives in so many different ways.
Do you think AR glasses will start with the Bluetooth effect, where it was seen as sort of a moral problem with people with these Bluetooth headsets walking around? It was almost looked down upon a little bit. Do you think it'll take some time for people to adopt the norm of wearing these glasses if they become widespread?
So our belief is we don't want to rush to the consumer, even though the consumer is the holy grail. Our current product, the R7, is targeted to the enterprise. Because if I could go to work and enhance my work and make it faster or better or more accurate, then the benefit outweighs anything else. And then we learn from that. So we first started in heavy industry, oil and gas. Now we're going enterprise. Now we're going light enterprise, prosumer. So we're naturally evolving. The glasses get smaller, they get lighter, they become more powerful. So once we're ready to show our consumer product, I think a lot of people will feel that it's a very beautiful device.
All right. Well, thank you very much for taking the time to interview.
Thank you, Alexander. Yeah.
My final interview is with Ori Inbar, the founder of the Augmented World Expo and CEO of AugmentedReality.org. The main goals of AugmentedReality.org are boosting awareness of the AR industry and its true potential, connecting content creators, and incubating initiatives and startups to accelerate the growth and progress of the new field. As the founder of this expo, Ori has a lot to say about where the technology is heading.
Can you tell our listeners a little bit about augmentedreality.org and the events that you host?
So yeah, hi everybody. Augmentedreality.org was founded almost a decade ago with a mission to help advance augmented reality to advance humanity. We set up a goal to achieve 1 billion augmented reality users by the end of the decade, which is 2020. And in order to achieve that, we produce events such as AWE, the largest of its kind, that is now in 3 continents, as well as help educate anyone from startups to corporations to the market at large, and help connect people that are passionate about this field all around the world.
Absolutely. Can you tell us what led to the founding, what events led to your founding of augmentedreality.org? When exactly did you know with certainty that this was a technology with such explosive potential?
So, you know, I discovered this about 10 years ago when I left after, you know, many years at startups and large corporations, and wanted to do something new, and came home and realized that my kids are always in front of a computer screen or playing video games, and they don't have as much interaction with the real world as I used to have as a kid. And I thought, you know, can't really force them to not do this. That's how millennials communicate. But I thought maybe if we extract some of the things that attract kids and adults to video games and the internet and bring it into the real world, we could change that. And that's when I discovered augmented reality as a technology that has been around for almost 40 years, but hidden in labs. Even I didn't know about it until that point. So the mission became to find a way to bring this to the masses. So I founded a company called Augmento back then, and we felt like it's an uphill battle because very few people actually are aware of this. So that's where we joined forces with a few additional companies and decided to form this organization to help advance this field.
And so is that what it is all about for you, is the interaction, the way to take this technology that, say, millennials, as your example, are so absorbed in and bring interaction back into the mix?
So it's really interaction, but in a new way. If interaction is usually referred to as interacting with a computer or with a mobile device, or the idea is to interact with the real world and make it more interesting, more engaging. And then we realized that actually you can improve everything that you do in your work and life. You can acquire skills faster. You can become better in any job you can think of. You can study faster and better. And you can play with more fun when you play in the real world, not just being stuck in a computer screen or even a virtual world.
Absolutely. And with an industry that seems to be growing exponentially every year, can you tell me just a summary of what has happened and changed in the last year in the worlds of AR and VR since the expo and the year before?
So in the last year, a lot have changed. You know, if you look at the trajectory from the last few years, one is that we moved from the gimmicky stage to a much more productive stage in augmented reality, and that was reflected by much stronger focus on the enterprise space. So if in the past we saw a lot of marketing applications and advertising and games, in the last couple of years it started to focus more on improving business processes for large corporations, Fortune 1000 companies. Last year we saw a few pilot projects with smart glasses that large corporations were kind of experimenting with. And many studies showed significant success in improving productivity and safety. So by moving to, and this year they're starting to transition to large scale deployments with hundreds of employees wearing smart glasses on a day-to-day basis to improve whatever they do at their job. So that's kind of one of the biggest changes. The other thing is that we've added much stronger focus on virtual reality, which is now becoming a big thing. And we see a lot of synergies between VR and AR that makes much more sense to bring those two communities together in one event and help accelerate both.
So this year, for the Augmented World Expo, the theme Superpowers for the People seems to have stuck. Can you tell us a little bit about why you stuck with the same theme? Do you think that augmented and virtual reality epitomize the theme of using technology to give people real superpowers?
It's exactly the case. Last year we introduced that theme, and it was so well received that we decided to keep it for another year. And in fact, it may be kind of a long-running theme for the next few years, because we realize that wherever it's work or study or playing, it can improve your capabilities significantly. And we're starting to see new technologies that allow you to see through walls, to use all sorts of heat detecting technologies to be able to see things that you cannot see with regular eyesight. And it allows you to manipulate objects as if you have telekinesis, or teleport yourself to another place and be able to collaborate with other people. So I think it resonates very well, even with folks that are coming from large companies with enterprise background. They realize that this is really making their workers, their employees, much stronger, much better at what they do, and it's really giving them superpowers. So although, some people may think it's a little bit comics book-like, but when you see what it actually does to people and how it helps us get better at anything we do, that theme resonates very well.
Well, when you say a lot of people seem to make a comic book connection with that, I think that's natural. And with the theme, of course, I'm going to need to bring in a quote from comic books: "With great power comes great responsibility." In an interconnected world that has these widespread superpowers through AR and VR, what new moral and ethical responsibilities do you think might come with that we'll need to be mindful about?
So it's really a big part of our focus at the event, and actually was part of my opening keynote. I mentioned that because I want everybody to think about how they use it for good. And when we say for good, it's first of all, don't use it for gimmicky stuff and to show off, but use it for something that really delivers value. And it could be a field service technician that is trying to fix a machine and is using it to fix it better, faster, so that whoever is using it can get on with their work. Or it could be someone playing ping pong and using augmented reality to learn how to play it better and faster, so they can enjoy it more, right? So doing good in the sense of providing more value to whoever is using it is the main focus. And there's definitely some other aspects like cultural impact and morality which needs to take into account. We're kind of putting this in the hands of the people that are working on these technologies, and that's where we're also integrating a lot of the design and art community in the event, so that they can add some of that aspect to the discussion, and make sure that we always keep that high on our minds.
Absolutely. And back on the superhero-centric culture that we were talking about, people have always been fantasizing about how we can give ourselves these real superpowers, and of course there have been other technologies that have attempted similar things to this, like development in exoskeletons and things like that. But do you think that AR and VR are going to be the first technology that will be widespread enough to actually do this for a large audience?
Absolutely. I think that it's really a combination of things. AR, VR, and wearables, to a large extent, in combination with the Internet of Things, are going to enable humans to have those superpowers. And I think not so much about a certain technology, it's really about a new wave of technology that includes all these pieces that enable us to become... to have those superpowers.
So that would be the combination of augmented reality, virtual reality, and Internet of Things?
That's right, yeah. In a sense, you could think about it that augmented reality is the interface between wearables, whether it's on our body or our head, and the world, which is embodied with the Internet of Things. So it's that communication, that interface, is AR.
Do you have any examples of what powers AR can give people that VR cannot, and vice versa?
Yeah, so I mean, VR, in essence, is about completely shutting the world from you and transporting you to a different world. It could be a virtual world, it could be a real world in a different place. You can experience news or travel in other places that you cannot otherwise. So it has that power of teleporting you into a different experience, and it's amazing. AR keeps you where you are. Allows you to see who's around you, to collaborate with people around you, to continue to do a certain task at hand, but then enhancing that or augmenting that experience with more information relevant specifically for that task.
do you think we'll reach a point where this technology is the norm and everyone can have superpowers in this sense?
That's really our mission, and that's the theme, really. It's about giving superpowers to all people. I think it's a movement that should not stop at certain people. Right now, it's of course, you know, it's only a small group that is using this because they have access to it and they have the need. But eventually, this is something that anyone should be able to use, whether it's with smart glasses or mobile devices or even projection on the real world. All of these technologies can enable you to have those powers. And our hope, our goal, is actually to have every single person on Earth be able to take advantage of that.
And just to wrap things up, could you maybe give us a prediction on where you think this will be in the next 5 or 10 years? A little bit of a look into the future of AR and VR.
So, you know, one thing that is amazing to think about is that at some point in the future we'll see an inflection point where more people use smart glasses than smartphones. And it's a pretty tall order because we have over 2 billion people using smartphones today and it's growing like 30 or 40% per year. But like in any new wave of technology, it's bound to happen because it's going to deliver a greater value than the previous wave. And if it took, you know, smartphones 10 years to get from 0 to 1 billion shipments, it could take a shorter amount of time for smart glasses to do that. So it could be, you know, less than 10 years, practically everyone will have the access to smart glasses and be using it. I don't know if we're going to use it all day long from morning to night, but we're going to use it for specific things that where it can really deliver significant value. Whether, you know, you're playing something or you're doing performing a certain task, or trying to fix something, or trying to study something. In a sense, what the other change from, or the other evolution from smartphones is that it will become much more natural. Mobile phones are more natural than interacting with a computer screen with keyboard and mouse, but that still requires you to hunch over and use your fingers to touch on a flat screen. Whereas when you move to augmented reality, the world itself is the platform. And the interaction happens through natural means. You just move your hands, you talk, you move your body, and it interacts with what's happening around you. So it's going to be, it's going to usher a new world or a new wave of technology that is so much more natural than what we had before. And that's what we're shooting for.
All right, thank you so much for talking to me.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
You have been listening to The Augmented Revolution, bringing superpowers to the people. We've discussed the ways this technology can help people, bring communities together, and give ourselves real actual superpowers. Now, it's up to content creators to get out there and start creating applications that make the world a better place and do more than just entertain us. If you would like to get involved in this movement, you can join up with the Virtual World Society at virtualworldsociety.org and also sign on to augmentedreality.org to follow important updates and events about the technology. Thank you for listening. Now, let's get out there and start creating content to make the world a better place.